Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, April 8th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar, and this is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting, not live, in the literal but not metaphorical shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Casual Friday. I am so casual that I'm actually not even here. I am en route up to Boston, Massachusetts to watch the Red Sox hopefully win against the New York Yankees in their home opener. It doesn't look good, folks, and let's be honest. The Sox are not doing so great. But I wasn't going to leave you without some fresh content. So today on the program, we have an interview with Duncan Meisel. He is the head of U.S. or is he, I should say, a spokesman for U.S. Uncut. He will tell us all about that organization and what they have planned. And before we get there, we welcome to the show Mr. Chris Rosen, the supposed senior editor or some such at MovieLine.com. Evan, Matt, and I spoke to Chris with his much-anticipated, long-overdue, since it came out last week, review of Who's the Caboose. And let's check on that now.
Christopher Rosen of MovieLine.com. Big shot senior editor, eh? Here is your theme song. You sit in a dimly lit room watching movies and you dress like a slob. Jimmy Rhythm Cakes got to ask you, said, man, how'd you get that job? I said, how did you get that job?
It is indeed the eternal question, isn't it? How did you get that job? And with that, let us bring to the show Chris Rosen, the senior editor of MovieLine.com. Chris, before we get to what we both know, and I think the entire audience knows, is going to be is the much-awaited review that you have, and thumb up or down on the cult classic. I don't want to in any way bias your decision. The cult classic,
right.
Hilarious. Who's the Caboose?
Yes.
Directed by yours truly. Before we get there, what did you tell me to watch last week?
Black Swan.
Black Swan. Didn't see it yet.
Yeah, well, you know, it's okay.
I will.
We got time.
I will.
Okay.
I will see it. If only because at one time I was friendly with Darren Aronofsky. It is Friday, even though this is pre-taped. It is Name Drop Friday.
Yes.
And, it will be Name Drop Friday when we hear this. But okay, and that was it. That was the only movie that you suggested last week?
Yeah, and Who's the Caboose? Remember, we were going to watch it.
Right. Yeah, I had already seen it.
Oh, right. Okay.
So it wasn't.
Oh, that's
right.
Not
a great suggestion. I know. I understand. It's you're very busy. You barely have time, apparently, to watch movies or
right,
because
exactly.
All the work you're doing at MovieLine.
So much work. There's just so much work, Sam. MovieLine.com. You know, we have all the latest news and reviews
right.
That you would want.
I can imagine.
It's really
there's,
great.
There's so many episodes of Parks and Recreation to catch up on, and then of course you want to watch the
yes.
Extras.
Right. Obviously.
Okay. So let's enough with the. With a dilly-dallying, I'm looking at you via the Google camera,
yes.
Whatever it is. So look at me in the eyes and tell me what you thought of the movie that I spent so many years working on and all my money to produce, and I'm very wrapped up emotionally in.
I have to say, I was very surprised. Not that
whoa.
So that's good.
I don't know really how to, I mean, I don't
let me
know.
Let me finish.
Maybe
let me
we should
finish.
Stop this right now.
No, no, no. Let me finish. Just because it's pre-taped, you can't stop. We're live now. Live to tape.
Yeah, no. I mean, if we were live, I would also contemplate stopping.
I was very pleasantly surprised. Not that I thought it was going to be, you know, not good. I assumed it was going to be good because, like we had said, obviously you had such a large cast and a lot of cameos and stuff and a lot of funny
Sarah
people
Sarah Silverman, John right. Benjamin, who's coming out with the show, the voice of Archer, and Bob mm-hmm. on Bob's Burgers, who was the voice of Ben on Dr. Katz. He was Coach McGurk on Cartoon Fans Know Who He Is. He's got a live-action show coming on Comedy Central. Sarah Silverman, David Cross from Mr. Show and Arrested Development, Andy Dick, and then cameos of Kathy Griffin and Laura Keitlinger and Laura Silverman. And
I thought Andy Laura Silverman had a very funny running cameo. I like that. I appreciate
Andy
that.
Kindler. The list really does go on and on. But I'm sorry. Continue.
I knew it was going to be funny, but I was surprised. First of all, it felt very... I mean, you know, there were parts of it that I thought were very, like, ahead of its time, really.
Mm-hmm.
Because you had really, I'm not even kidding, you had, like, it was very, the way you
Why
said
would you
it
think
up,
I would think you were kidding?
Well, I heard chuckling in the background.
No, not for me. That was a nodding of agreement.
Oh, okay. So, but I mean, honestly, like, a lot of the stuff that you were doing in Who's the Caboose is now done routinely on television and all over the place. And it's really, I know, like, it's not like the mockumentary feature is super original. I mean, you know, Spinal Tap did it, but
right.
when you were doing this, not a lot of people were doing it.
Right.
And I really think you sold the bit so well that it really did not feel like a mockumentary at times. I mean, it's obviously absurd and stuff in some places, but it did feel like it could be a documentary.
There were actually people who literally said to me at the time, like, did all these people know that they were going to be on camera?
And I mean, like, part of it is because I think, and this is going to sound like you're going to say I'm slamming you, but I think not that it doesn't look amateurish, but a lot of it is, it's kind of the way you did it with the improvised nature of the performances and stuff. It really feels natural and kind of not acting. It does not feel like acting.
Right. That's exactly I'm not sure if you're aware of this as a movie critic, but that's exactly what you want acting to be, not to feel like acting. I mean, it was supposed to be naturalistic, and we used a certain vernacular with the camera that enhanced that, I think is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, I guess you could say it like that. I like the way I said it better, but sure. And I was just I was surprised. I was really surprised at how you
how
know,
much do they pay you over there? Moving on,
is a it, lot. It's an internship.
It's an internship.
I was very surprised because I could not believe how ahead of its time it was. It was really like you really nailed a lot of things, and I thought you were very funny.
Hmm.
I actually thought you, I thought you were a better performer at that time than Sarah Silverman was.
Well, Sarah's part was not as comedic in some ways. I mean, she had the straight role in a lot of ways.
And some of it, I just didn't think she sold as well as you did. I felt like you were very, very funny. I love the part, you know, not to go into specific parts, but I thought it was very funny when you go out to L.A.
Well, you can't ruin. Why not go into specific parts?
I thought it was very funny. I thought it was very funny when you went out to L.A. first and you go to – she picks you up and you bring her the – I thought that whole sequence really funny. You bring her the Times and then you go to her apartment and like – the way she's like, oh, you're not going to stay here. And your reaction to that was very funny, I thought. Like the way you're like, oh, well, no. Of course not, but obviously you were.
Right.
And I just thought it was really good. I thought John Benjamin was fantastic. And
yes.
I was shocked that he didn't – I mean, I know he does – he's obviously, like you said, he does these major animation things. But I'm kind of surprised he never really popped as like a live-action performer.
Well, he –
or did he just choose not to?
Yeah, he sort of has success, you know, some of those
Because he's very funny
issues.
In it.
Yeah,
and he's very good with you. He actually reminded me a lot – I don't know if he did this on purpose, but it reminded me a lot in Annie Hall – he reminded me of Tony Roberts' character.
No.
No?
No.
That's what
in
he was
fact,
like.
Being intimately familiar with both films, I would say that is a sort of insane assessment.
No, I don't think so. Mm. If you watch, when was the last time you saw Annie Hall?
Well, yesterday.
No, come on. You're full of shit yesterday.
No, Benjamin and I have a good dynamic together. We've known each other since we were in junior high.
Yeah, and you could tell that comes through. I mean, the chemistry between you two is very good.
He is,
and I mean, like
hilarious in it.
He's hilarious. I thought Andy Dick was great.
Andy,
I was surprised because I normally don't like Andy Dick, but I thought he was really
it
great.
Was one of his best performances, I think.
It really
I think
was.
He feels that actually.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was good. I mean, like it definitely felt like a forebearer for a future Andy Dick. You know, he's been doing that kind of thing, that kind of shtick.
Now, I have to say that when I made the film and was looking forward to talking to film critics about it and being interviewed about it, I never thought I would have such a superficial conversation about it. I mean, it's really... There's a lot more thought that went into that film, I think, than you're...
Did it really? I mean, like...
But, I mean, I think it works on different levels, the high level and the low level. And
I don't think... I think you might be giving yourself... I know you're in it, but I think you might be giving yourself a little too much credit.
Well, like you said, it was ahead of your time, and maybe in another 10 years you'll review the film again and you'll realize you'll see some certain things. I mean, it could be your age.
Well, give me an example of certain things.
I mean, you're not aware of the... First of all, the deconstructive nature of the whole thing. The fact that it was sort of based upon different verite movements that at that time were not so popular, even in the context of documentary. Like I say, it was based on Sherman's March. And the use of the camera in that fashion, that verite fashion.
I said it. That's what that ahead of its time means.
And you may not be aware of this. It was the... first non-narrative, non-documentary film transferred from Digibeta to film.
Yes, no, we talked about that last week with the Hoop Dreams.
Mm-hmm. Great. That's it?
It's not that's it. I really enjoyed it. I thought
what
it was very
good. The scene
good.
On the escalator? That was pretty funny, right?
That was pretty funny. I thought that was clever. I was wondering how you did that. I mean, how many takes did you do for these things?
Well, you know, it depended. I mean, that's the amazing thing, too.
And, like, did you have a lot of, like,
12 days.
Did you was it like guerrilla style, or I mean, did you try to get permits? Or you were just like, "Fuck it, let's just shoot."
We did both.
Because it felt like that, which also lent a lot of energy to it. I thought.
Right. I mean, the idea behind it was let's shoot it like a documentary. In other words, the actors will rehearse without the camera.
And now you mentioned this before. So, like, because it was so because it really feels like a documentary. I mean, like. Was that a tough sell then to get that like people to see it like as something else? Like, did you not get as much credit for it? You think because
was it a tough sell?
No, I'm saying
coming
like,
out on
think...
DVD 15 years later. What do you mean? Was that a tough sell?
No, I'm just saying. Like,
of course,
at the
it
time,
was a tough sell. It was an
at the time.
Sell.
At the time, did you
and
think you didn't get
nobody
enough
nobody knew
credit?
Who those people were in the
well,
in
no,
the independent
no shit.
Film
but
world.
I mean, like, did you think you didn't get enough credit for how funny it was because people were like, "Oh, it's just a documentary."
Well, first of all, in the independent film world, you can't find a greater amount of less humorous people. And at that time, it wasn't hip to like David Cross or Sarah Silverman. Mm-hmm. And so they had no idea who she was, and we got no credit for any of that stuff. I mean, we played at like two film festivals, you know, one in Florida and one in Bermuda.
It's really unbelievable. I'm shocked it took – now, once everybody got famous, how come it took so long to come out? Like how much like red tape
lack
did you have
of
to
effort
go
on
it?
My part? At one point I stopped. I didn't – you know, these people called me. And, you know, at one point we were going to make a sale to IFC like –
because really it does –
probably
does feel
around
like
the late 90s
IFC.
Or something or 2000 we were going to make a sale to IFC. But if IFC paid what they wanted to pay for the film, I would have had to go more out of pocket to get the film on TV.
Wow.
Because, you know, everybody did it as a favor. We did it on a like some type of low-budget contract, and for it to have gotten to TV, the whatever – 15 grand that IFC would have given me, I would have had to have paid out another 15 grand in addition to that 15 grand. And I had already spent, I don't know, I think I must have spent like a lot of money on that movie. Like, and like, you know, I spent all the sitcom money that I had. That was basically, that was my career. I would do sitcoms
and
then I would spend the money on movies that would never sell. And I'm trying to repeat it. I did the same thing with Swag. I've done my entire business career has followed that premise. But, you know, I sort of like was thinking, you know, the way I justified it at the time was because I took a lot of grief when I first went out there and did sitcom work from sort of some of the community, the comedy community. And my feeling was like I was, you know, sort of like following Cassavetes in a way. I mean, except for without the talent or the depth.
Right. I was going to say.
But, and the skill. But at least in terms of a model, he would do, you know, crappy acting gigs that he felt so that he could finance his own movies. Except for he was much more successful. But also a lot more self-destructive. I am a lot healthier than he is. Do you know who Cassavetes is?
Yes, I know who Cassavetes
not
is.
Not Nick Cassavetes.
No, I know not Nick Cassavetes. Not John Cassavetes.
He's not the guy who you buy
directed the
newspapers
Notebook.
For.
No, I know.
He directed what?
Nick Cassavetes directed The Notebook.
Right. What did any? Do you know any John Cassavetes films?
Woman on the Verge.
Mm-hmm.
and all those other ones are Gina Rowland that I can't think of. I could Google it right now.
Chris,
I don't know off the top
you know,
of my head.
Chris, we're going to have to say goodbye. So wait, so what are you doing? Are you going to recommend it to people or not?
I definitely recommend it. I think it was very good. I definitely think people should see it.
Did
and
you
I
review
really
it on your site?
I didn't review it yet. No, we just did this. It's Wednesday, remember?
Yeah, all right.
I just watched it yesterday.
Okay.
But I really enjoyed it. I was very surprised at how much I enjoyed it. And honestly, I mean, I was going to watch it anyway because, you know, we're friends.
Right.
We're friends, right?
Have you seen Pilot Season?
I have not seen Pilot Season. I'm very interested to see Pilot
yes,
Season.
Yes. Now, I wonder what you will gain, what you'll understand.
One thing I wanted to ask you about.
In terms of a benefit. Yeah, good.
One Please. Thing I want to ask you about Who's a Caboose is, now, looking back on it now, obviously you made that. How old were you when you made that? Like in your 20s?
I was in my...
in your 30s? Like early 30s?
96. I would have been about 30, I think.
So do you think you would have done anything differently? Like, I mean, the ending, and not, you know, we don't want to spoil it, but it's very, it's, you know, you wrap it up pretty fast. It kind of has like a quasi-happy ending, you could argue. I mean, like, obviously you kind of sell out and stuff. But, you know, would you have done anything differently with it? Now, looking
yeah,
back?
Yeah, I'm sure, but I can't, you know, to be honest with you, I haven't watched it in a long time, and I don't, you know, I think, you know, for a first film, it's impossible for me to say that I could have done anything differently. I mean, the story could be a little bit tighter in some areas, and I'm probably, if I went and sat down to edit it again, I would know how to edit it tighter, but at the time, you know, we didn't know what we were doing. I mean, we went and edited the whole thing. There's actually a short film I did for MTV at the time for Apartment 2F with the Sklar Brothers. And the premise of the film was MTV has given me $20,000 to make a short film, a short funny film. And fortunately, short, you know, funny is a subjective term. And so I basically did a direct-to-camera thing where I hired the DP who was going to shoot the New York thing. I basically embezzled money from this MTV thing. And I said, wouldn't it be funny if I use some of this money to pay my editor, Jim, who's editing Who's the Caboose? And so I shot in his basement apartment so I could pay him a location fee, and I paid him
wow.
as an actor, and he turned around and he just waved money. He goes, thanks, MTV. And so I actually paid for the editing, part of the editing of Who's the Caboose with this money by putting him in the film. And I kept doing that. That's how I shot the New York stuff. I hired a guy in Boston. I said, here, I'm going to pay you too much for this MTV film, but you got to do my Who's the Caboose for free in New York.
I feel like that kind of stuff, you don't even see that anymore now. I just think that's specific to that time period. I think it's a lot of fun.
I think that's true. I think everything got ruined after I did it. I broke the mold.
I think you did. I definitely think you did a little. I don't know. I mean, like, not you. I think that whole indie filmmaking thing that you were a part of back then in the late 90s.
I wasn't
kind of
part of it,
exist.
Though. I wasn't
yeah,
part
no,
of
but
it.
You,
You're right. But you know what? It didn't even exist then. By that point, the ship had sailed already.
Okay.
If you didn't have connections, industry connections,
you
weren't going to sell
anything.
There was no more send in a movie and it get discovered, you know, via Sundance. It didn't. That wasn't happening at that time, and I was a little bit naive about that. But live
well,
and
listen,
learn.
I hope.
And I had so much success with A Bad Situationist after that because of that experience.
Well, listen, I hope people actually do watch it. I'm sure all the fans have already. But
yeah,
I mean,
some people don't like comedy.
If people are on the fence, I mean, I think they should really watch it. It's a lot
you know,
of fun.
If people are
and
on the fence,
like,
with all
due
respect, if people are on the fence, Chris, I cannot imagine that you would push them over the fence.
I think I would. This movie was good.
Yeah.
Watch it.
Yeah. It's no whatever that movie you suggested about the train leaving the station with Denzel Washington or whatever it was.
No, that wasn't me. That was, what's his face?
Oh, Benson?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
You shit on me because he was so great in suggesting that shitbox movie. And now you're throwing it back in my face.
Goodbye, Chris. Talk to you next week.
Bye.
So that's Chris Rosen's review. I don't know. Make of it what you will. Just having this guy tell you that you're being groundbreaking is like, I don't know. It's like having, I don't know what it's, It's like something that's like something else and then something. I can't come up with it. All right, look, folks, what can I tell you? It's Casual Friday, and I'm not even here. So now let's go. We have this interview that I did last week with Duncan Meisel from U.S. Uncut. It is about 15 minutes long or so. And enjoy. Okay, welcome back to the Majority Report. My name is Sam Cedar. On the phone, Duncan Meisel of USUncut.org. Welcome to the program, Duncan.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Duncan, give me a little background on US Uncut. It is, I know that it's based on a movement that has grown in Britain, but just give me some of the background.
Well, that's right. We're taking inspiration from the Uncut movement, which began in Britain, is now spread to the United States, to Canada, to France, to South America, or to South Africa, Australia, all over the world. And we're an organization of people who pay their fair share in taxes, who are organizing against corporate tax cheats, who are bankrupting America, making sure they know there are going to be consequences for their actions so long as people like us continue to face unnecessary budget cuts caused by their tax avoidance.
And this is in Britain, we're already looking at a full-blown austerity program that is passed and is slowly being rolled out, and we're already seeing the implications of that on its economy, aren't we?
That's right. And in America, you're seeing the same thing. I read an article the other day. In Texas alone, the budget cuts that the state is facing might cost 600,000 jobs, and that's just in the state of Texas. And the impact of corporate tax dodging is incredible. And looking at state cuts, which is where you really feel the jobs hit the most, corporate tax dodging accounts for $100 billion in lost revenue every year, which is exactly the same amount as all of the state budget shortfalls combined. So they're all facing collectively $100 billion in budget shortfall, and corporate tax dodgers paying up would actually be able to cover all of that. So I think you're going to see incredible impact on our economy in the near future from the austerity stuff.
Now, I know that the establishment narrative is that U.S. corporations pay a higher tax rate than just about anywhere else in the world at 35%. But the reality is very different from that, isn't it?
Of course. There are really striking examples of how false that is. I mean, companies like Boeing, Bank of America, Verizon, GE, they don't pay anywhere close to 35%. They pay 0%. In some places, they get tax credits. They get money back from the government. So they're paying a negative tax rate, in fact. And the story that corporations pay 35%, it's just false. It happens in almost no cases, and many striking examples, companies pay nothing, which is really shocking. And you know, I pay more than that. Literally, I have more money than that in my pocket than they paid in taxes.
Well, so I mean, now do we see these large corporations? I mean, I imagine that there are some smaller small businesses that end up paying somewhere around that corporate rate, because of course they don't have the armies of tax lawyers that are figuring out ways of dodging it. Are we seeing these mega corporations basically stay silent in these battles, or do they pay lip service to it? I mean, you know, GE couldn't escape the fact that it's paying no taxes this year. And, of course, we see how much Jeffrey Immelt has suffered in the public sphere because of it. He's been appointed to head Obama's jobs committee. But, I mean, what position do these large corporations take officially in terms of their taxes?
Well, the position they take always is that, I mean, in the case of GE and Bank of America, they say, they throw up their hands. They say, we made a loss this year. But when you look at the actual balance sheets, they didn't make a loss this year. They only had a loss in the United States because all of the profits are being shipped offshore. Bank of America maintains 115 subsidiaries and tax shelter companies. And GE, I don't know the exact number for GE, but GE maintains a huge number as well. And all those foreign subsidiaries are making plenty of money. It's only in the United States that they refuse to localize any profits and keep the money here. They ship it all offshore so that all the foreign companies make money. But in the United States, of course, they lose money because it's elsewhere. So that's the official line, at least from the people who pay nothing. There are companies that pay a little bit of taxes, but will pay an effective tax rate of less than 10%. Companies like ExxonMobil, and it's the same situation. They pay a pittance. They pay a little bit, much less than you or I. Say we've done our share, and then on the back end, they hire armies of lobbyists in order to reduce the tax rate on top of that. So the official line is we lost money or we paid a very little, and the reality is, of course, far from that.
So, I mean, what's the fix for this? I mean, short of obviously pay your fair share, how does that happen? Do we need a wholesale change of the tax laws? Is this something that it's simply the key here is to shame these corporations into paying their taxes? I mean, what's the strategy here or in the midterm, let's say?
Well, the strategy for U.S. Uncut is to show corporate tax dodgers that there will be consequences for their actions, to go to their front doors, to organize against them and make sure that they know there will be an impact on their brand and on their bottom line if they continue to avoid paying taxes. Like we go to the corporations who are cheating. We literally stand at their front door. In some cases, we've shut down Bank of America branches in San Francisco and D.C. and in Portland. And we literally impose a consequence there, and that's going to start moving the ball. If they realize that this is unsustainable for them, they're going to get the folks in Congress to come along. That's the sad situation we're in. In terms of actual legislation that would be passed in Congress, there are options on the table, stuff like the Stop Tax Haven Abuse Act, which has been introduced, which are great solutions. But when it comes to really changing the culture of corporate America, what it takes is strong organizing, action on their turf, at their branches, at their meetings, so they know that people who do pay their fair share aren't going to put up with it. That's what it takes to change the culture of taxation in America.
There really has been a vacuum, hasn't there, in the U.S. political scene of this type of direct action in terms of corporations. I mean, we've seen movements where people have organized to boycott certain corporations if they're advertising on, let's say, Glenn Beck or something like this, so that there's an awareness that if you're going to support these type of voices, you're going to pay for it. But there, as far as I can tell, you guys are the one of the only entities out there doing this in an organized fashion. Is that right?
There are other folks who are organizing on this, and we're definitely not alone. It's a tactic I think the progressive movement does need to take on more frequently. Like, you go to the people who are responsible for the problems, not the Congress that is broken, and try and get them to fix it. I'd say that we definitely take inspiration from some of the things that happened during healthcare reform, during that fight, where people went to the insurers, demanded that they get coverage, or at least, apologies for the atrocious things they did to people. And I think that we're very proud to be taking this on, and there are a number of other really strong progressive groups who are starting to organize against corporate power directly on this issue. And on tax day, there are going to be hundreds of actions across the country organized at corporate tax dodgers offices or branches. And we're definitely not alone in this, although we're one of the only groups that's taken it on exclusively.
Yeah, as opposed to like dealing with the loss of revenues that we're suffering because millionaires have such a reduced tax rate relative to our historical standards.
Sure, and by all means, that should be fixed as well. And,
right.
And fortunately, there are a lot of folks who are really on top of that. But the corporate tax focus is something that I think has gone ignored for too long. And at least in the last couple of months, it's really become an issue again, and I'm glad to see that.
Tell me some of the challenges that must, because I want you to give me a little more details about what you're planning Saturday the 15th, and then through over the next couple of weeks, I should say, leading up to tax day. But I would imagine that one of the challenges of doing this type of direct action is that you can't fully publicize what you're about to do because there's going to be an attempt to thwart that, right?
Right. And there have been times where you know, that's been a challenge. But we do our best to be public. It's open. It's participatory. Everyone is welcome to start an action, list it on our website, and take action themselves. And we're not organized with any secrecy in mind, actually. You know, we really encourage everyone to take action where they feel comfortable, to do everything they can to make sure that there will be consequences for corporate tax cheats. And we're pretty open, actually. We do try and, you know, hold our cards close to the chest. And I will say that we have some things up our sleeve for the next couple weeks that'll come out before tax day. But in terms of the local organizing, going to a tax branch or going to the branch of a Bank of America or a Verizon or something like that, we list all the events on our website, and we encourage everyone to be as open as they can about it, because we think we're right. And we actually have many cases where, you know, security guards, police officers, all these folks feel the impact of budget cuts much more so than the people running the corporations. And we actually get pretty positive responses from them. And they encourage us to keep action, keep raising our voices, and we've made some strange allies in this fight.
I would imagine. And a big part of this, obviously, is the value of doing it at your local branch, even if it's a small town, even if it gets obviously no national media coverage, is that it's likely to get local media coverage. And to the extent that it doesn't, it's still raising the awareness of whether it's the other customers in the bank at that time or just people on the street. I mean, this is the key, isn't it? Is to have the public more and more aware of just how much they're abusing the system.
Yeah, it's a fight everyone can wage, and it's a useful fight at every level, because budget cuts go down. They hurt the local government the most. They hurt you know, your city government and your state government. That's where the jobs are lost. That's where you really feel it. And the more you can raise the issue in your community in every way you can, the better off we all are.
So just give me a sense of what you're planning over the next week or so, and where can people get more information?
Well, we have a weekend of action from Friday, April 15th to Monday, April 18th. The 18th is actually tax day. We encourage people to have events throughout the entire weekend, wherever they can. It's going to be a carnival of tax cheat actions where people can go to their local branches, raise your voice, downloadable signs on our website, usuncut.org, and there's all the resources you need to start an action there. We're planning on having well over 50 actions coast to coast, all volunteer run. We're on a shoestring here, and it's something anyone can do. And we have a few big ones planned in you know, New York, D.C., where we have really strong groups, where we're definitely going to be making a splash. But we also have stuff in tiny places, like Silver City, New Mexico is one of my favorite folks, one of my favorite places. There's a great group there. It's a tiny town, and people can be taking actions at all levels of government, at all different sizes of cities to make their voices heard.
And so people should go to usuncut.org to get more information, right?
That's right. You can go to usuncut.org to download resources, signs, talking points, press releases, everything you need to get started. And then you can also list your action there, and you'll see all the actions listed by date. There might already be one in your city. We encourage you to link up with the organizers that have already gotten the ball rolling, or start your own. And then also get in touch with us after you list it, and we can help you out troubleshooting and making sure that you make your voices heard and the corporate tax cheats hear you on tax day.
And going forward, after the tax day passes, do you have any plans or plans that you can talk about, I should say? I mean, where does this campaign, where does it continue to lead?
Well, there's always going to be a fight as long as we're still going to be having budget cuts at the state level, at the federal level. I think the government, like the fight over the government shutdown, whenever that comes, is going to be huge for us. And that's definitely going to be a point where we need to go to the people ultimately responsible for that, which is the corporations, and getting up in their faces. And then after tax day, I'd say the sky's the limit. You know, there's a really important election coming up. You may have heard about. And so we're going to maybe take it in that direction. We haven't hammered out our plans, but when we do make our plans, we're going to be doing it with all the people who have gotten involved so far. So if you're interested in this, definitely encourage you to jump in now so you can be part of that conversation. Make sure that you can be part of the process of taking this fight to the next level.
Duncan Meisel of US Uncut at usuncut.org. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sam.
Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the Mets are gonna kick in. And my pie.
All right, folks, that wraps it up for today. Abbreviated show. There will be no extras for members today. My apologies. But I promise to talk about my experience at the Red Sox game on Monday in the post show. Remember, we're going to have calls on Monday. We had calls for the first time yesterday on Thursday. And all new show. I will be live on Monday and Tuesday of next week. And, well, enjoy the government shutdown as it's taking place. I'm not sure. My guess is that by tonight, Friday night, the government will have shut down. And they'll have wrapped it up by Monday. We'll see. We will keep you updated, and we'll talk about it on Monday. Thanks for joining me, folks. Have a great weekend.
The nurse shifted into me while I shifted into